It's a song that was done by Nine Inch Nails, and then it was redone a little bit later by, out of all people, Johnny Cash. And interestingly enough, the song really did well. In fact, he did a video for it, and it just exploded. I mean, it was quite a song. In fact, it was sort of one of his final hits before his death. And I think it's interesting because a song like that, and especially this one, really resonated with so many people. And I think the reason for that is because it's a song that has so much pain, so much emotion in it. It's one of those songs you don't know, okay, should we clap after that song or do we just sit? There's that line in the song that says, I will let you down, I will make you hurt. I think that expresses so many of the fears that we have in life, doesn't it? Or for some of us, it expresses the really perhaps even the failures that have resulted in letting someone down that we love or hurting someone. You know, failures, it's just a tough topic, isn't it? And yet we all understand it. We all get it. We all understand failure. You know, whether we're the person who failed or whether we're the person who experienced perhaps the consequences of somebody else's failure, we all get it. We understand it. We may not always be honest about it. We may not always want to talk about it. We certainly don't want to walk around with one of these symbols behind us everywhere we go. This is the Twitter symbol for failure. In fact, if you were to do a Twitter search and use this phrase, fail, you'd find all kinds of interesting statements, 140 characters or less, of what people consider to be failure. In fact, I looked it up today. Here's a couple of examples. I just realized I need to do my history homework. Fail. iTunes store search is slow today. Fail. Here's a more serious one. You know there's nothing there anymore if you can lay in bed for hours and not say one thing to the other person. Fail. Here's another one. Corporate fail. BP's oil-sponsored aquarium. Oh, failure. Man, it's everywhere, isn't it? There's even a website out. It's a blog called failblog.org. So if you're ever in the mood just to look at a lot of failures at one time, just go to that blog. And there's photos, there's videos, and there's actually some pretty funny ones. In fact, I'll show you a couple of the images that you'll find on this site. Here's one. This is the Hello Kitty Darth Vader costume. Fail, okay. Then you've got the dog who gets a woman's face confused with a Frisbee. Fail. Oh, but I tell you who didn't fail was that photographer. Here's one, this young man's hairstyle. Fail. All right. Here's another one, little Charlie sticking a knife in the electrical outlet. Major failure. Little Charlie is not with Jesus. How about this one? This sign in front of a church. Failure, big fail right there. Or here's another one, okay? Fail, tired of being a loser? Turn to God. Yeah, fail. Speaking of failure, there's a video, I don't know if you saw it, that's been, they showed on the news the other day, and when I saw it, I said, man, I gotta find this and show it to everybody, because this is a great example of failure. Watch this.
Läuferin der 90er bezeichnet und dann war sie noch ganz unter dem Eindruck dieses Rennens offenbar, als sie die Anlaufbahn von Kofi Amoab im Weitsprung kreuzte. Ja, da schreit man, pass auf, aber sie weiß nicht, wohin sie hingucken soll. Oh, das sah bös aus. Kofi Amoab am Anlauf zu seinem vierten Versuch.
Oh, that had to hurt. And it does, doesn't it? It hurts. Whether it's a marital failure or some other relational failure, maybe it's a career failure, moral failure, parenting, whatever. You know, failures come in all shapes and sizes, don't they? And the truth is, really, it happens to all of us. I mean, really, the question is not if I fail. The question really is when I fail, right? I mean, it's not if I fail, it's when I fail. And the thing is, it may not be a huge immoral or unethical or illegal failure, and it hopefully won't be. But because we're human, we're going to fail. The question is, what will we do when it happens? Well, that's a question I want to look at today. We're in week number 2 of our series, People of the Second Chance. And I want to ask this question today. What do we do when it comes to our failure? How do we respond to it? How do we react to our failures? What do we do following a failure in our lives? Well, speaking of failure, I want you to watch this clip before we continue.
There comes a time when you know you've got to make a change. You know, you can't lead a company like this unless you love food. I love food. I love pizza. It was about 50 years ago that they started the first store just about 5 miles from here.
Two brothers had a great idea, and they also said they wanted to get it delivered within 30 minutes, and that's something that no one said could be done. In fact, the first pizza delivery vehicle for our company is that vehicle right there. Around the 80s, we were exploding. We were the fastest growing company in the history of franchise business. Nothing had ever grown like that.
Now we're almost 9,000 restaurants around the world. We love what we do at Domino's.
Pizza, where's the love? How hard? Bread, sauce, cheese, fresh ingredients. Doesn't feel like there's much love in Domino's pizza.
Domino's pizza crust to me is like cardboard.
Is it hard to wash the stuff?
Yeah, it's hard to watch.
I hear what some folks are saying about our stuff.
Oh, this one's bad. Worst excuse for pizza I've ever had.
The sauce tastes like ketchup.
Totally void of flavor.
You know what? When you first hear it, it's shocking.
The cardboard complaint is the most common one.
This we hear over and over and over.
I mean, that hits you right in the heart. This is what we've done. This is what I've done, you know, for 25 years now.
You can either use negative comments to get you down, or you can use them to excite you and energize your process of making a better pizza. We did the latter.
Most companies hide the criticism that they're getting, and we actually faced it head on.
Some people didn't get us credit for the taste of our product. That's what we're fixing.
We listen to our consumers, and they want us to be better, and we want them to be happier. We want people to love our pizza.
This is what's driving us. This is what's lit the fire under us. This is what's making us want to get better.
Who are we?
Pizza! It's been crazy down here. We had our best chefs working hard to find the best combination, looking at 10 crust types, 15 sauces, dozens of cheeses.
You can't just add a little salt or add a little something to the recipe. I mean, we basically had to start over with a new recipe.
And they were working day and night and weekends to get it done.
I don't have time to finish that, but it's pretty interesting, isn't it? I mean, you really got to give it to them. I mean, they did something that very few people, very few companies ever do when it comes to failure. They owned it, didn't they? No, they owned it 100%. And if you think about it, they could have done so many other things. They could have tried hiding it. They could have tried denying it. They could have tried blaming it on everybody else. They could have tried ignoring it. But instead, they owned it. They owned it. They owned their failure. They may not have fixed the problem. I don't know, because I haven't really had Domino's pizza in a while. But does anyone vouch for that? Is it anybody? No? Okay. No? Good? Bad? No? No comment? Okay. So they may not have fixed it, but I'll tell you what, at least they certainly did own it. You got to give them that. Isn't it funny how slow we can be at owning and taking responsibility for our failures? And yet how quick we can be to take ownership and responsibility for our successes. You know, in many ways, I mean, think about it. We tend to own the things that we should give away, and we tend to give away the things that we should take responsibility and own. It's like we do the exact opposite of what we should do. Jim Collins wrote a great book a few years ago called Good to Great. And in his book, he talks about a very interesting concept called window and mirror maturity. Window and mirror maturity. And it's this idea that when things go well, people with this kind of maturity point out the window and give credit to others or to factors beyond themselves. And yet when things go badly, when things fail, they take responsibility by looking in the mirror and saying, I'm responsible. And yet we have a tendency to do just the opposite, don't we? In fact, I mean, not only do we have a tendency to do that, but in a lot of ways, it's almost like default for humanity, right? To blame others, to give away the things that we should keep, and to keep the things we should give away. I mean, here, great example, Adam and Eve, the very first humans, right? They're in the Garden of Eden. They have failed miserably. And what do? Well, they hide, right? The scriptures say they hide from God. And then God says to them, "What have you done?" And what do they say? Adam says, "It was the woman." And the woman says, "It was the serpent." Right? See, we tend to own what we should give away. And we give away, sometimes very quickly, the things that we should take responsibility for and own, which, of course, is a real problem, especially when it comes to our failures. And so I want to give you three things today. And if you're taking notes, you might want to write these down. I want to give you three things that I think will help us when it comes to the failure and how we respond to failure. And of course, the first thing, and probably one of the most important things we could ever do when it comes to recovering from failure, responding to failure, is first of all, own it. Would you say that with me? Ready? That was very weak. Very weak. You failed, all right? Let's try one more time. Ready? Own it. There we go. Own it. Yeah, we must own it. I love this quote. Albert Ellis said this. Listen, "The best years of your life are the ones in which you decide your problems are your own. You don't blame them on your mother, the ecology, or the president, or fill in the blank. You realize that you control your own destiny." So what does it look like to own our failures? Well, it might help by talking about what it doesn't look like first, okay? For example, owning our failures is not about becoming Mr. and Mrs. Sackcloth and Ashes. Okay, owning our failures is not, that does not mean embracing self-hatred or victimhood. Owning our failures does not mean that we pitch a tent in the land of self-pity. But it does mean that we stop making excuses. And that we stop trying to manage our image that we've become so good at doing. And it means we embrace humility and we get a clear understanding of how we contributed to that failure. I just, one of the most important things we could ever do when we fail is to take ownership. And I'll tell you, it's so important that I think that you really can't move forward in health if you don't first take responsibility and own your failure. And yet it is so hard, isn't it? I'll tell you, part of the reason it's so hard is because there's always those voices around us. There's always sometimes people, sometimes it's our own voice of our pride speaking up or all kinds of things. But there's always those voices that want to do everything they can to help us rest on our excuses. Right? They want to help us camp out on all the justifications as to why we did what we did, right? Well, I mean, I know it was a mistake, but if they just hadn't, or if my wife just would have been more, right? Or hey, you know, I can't blame you for what you did. Yeah, it was bad, but come on, Scott. I mean, anybody in your position would have done the exact same thing. See, it's such an easy, such a natural mode to slip into, and yet that's not taking ownership. Jesus tells a very interesting parable in Luke chapter 18. I want to share it with you. Luke chapter 18, let me just read it to you. He says this: "Two men went to the temple to pray. One was a Pharisee, very, very religious individual, and the other was a despised tax collector. The Pharisee stood by himself and prayed this prayer: 'I thank you, God, that I am not a sinner like everyone else. For I don't cheat, I don't sin, and I don't commit adultery. I'm certainly not like that tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give you a tenth of my income.'" Verse 13. "But the tax collector stood at a distance and dared not even lift his eyes to heaven as he prayed. Listen, instead he beat his chest in sorrow, saying, 'Oh God, be merciful to me, for I am a sinner.'" And here's what Jesus said about it. Look at verse 14. He says, "I tell you, this sinner," not the religious Pharisee, but "this sinner returned home justified before God." And then he goes on to say, in fact, I want to read this last part together, can we? Let's read. "For those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted." Did you catch that? Those who exalt themselves will be humbled. Those who humble themselves will be exalted. Okay, that right there, listen, that is right there the essence of taking ownership of our failures, humility. Humility. I mean, think for a second about someone you know who has failed you. Or think of, you can think of any example. Maybe it's someone high profile, someone you saw on TV or whatever. Maybe it's your wife, your husband, your friend, whatever it is. But you and I, we both know there's a huge, huge difference between the kind of person who displays a posture of humility and versus the kind of individual who does nothing more than make excuses and worse yet, tries to pretend that what they did wasn't a big deal. Huge difference between the two types of people. See, here's the thing. Taking ownership of our failures means embracing a posture of humility and just being honest about our failures. But you know what's interesting? You know what group of people have the hardest time in the world being honest about their failures? You know what group of people that is? Christians. Oh, yeah, Christians have such a hard time being honest about their failures. For all kinds of reasons, of course. I mean, there's all sorts of reasons for that. But I think for many of us, I mean, I don't know about you, I know for me, I didn't grow up in a church environment where I was necessarily encouraged to be honest about my failures. So I spent a lot of time trying to hide my failures. I spent a lot of time trying to pretend that I was something that I really wasn't and trying to look a lot better than I really was. And see, that's why here at The Orchard, man, my hope, my prayer is that we can be honest about our mistakes and failures here. Man, and we can be the kind of community that refuses to hold on to the facades and refuses to try to keep up this you know, image management that some of us are so good at. And my hope and prayer is that this community, The Orchard, could be the kind of place where we can just be honest about our brokenness. Richard Rohr has a great quote about this. I want you to really get this. He says these words, "Humility and honesty are really the same thing. Listen, a humble person is simply a brutally honest person about the whole truth." Just leave that up there for a second. You catch that? A humble person is simply a brutally honest person about the whole truth. So, taking ownership, it means we embrace a posture of humility and we get honest about our failures. We get honest about our contribution to the failure. But then the other thing I think it also means is that it also means that we are aware of how our failure has impacted others. And so we don't just own our failures, we also work to amend it. Would you say that after me? Amend it, I forgive you. Amend it, okay. Now, here's the thing about amending, okay? Amending something means that we find ways to fix whatever it is that's broken, okay? And this is very, very important because here's the thing. Not only does our effort of amending it impact our current circumstances, but it also will play a huge role in where we go in the future. Huge role, okay? In many ways, making amends, or at least attempting to make amends, sets the tone for any possible chance of future success. Makes a huge difference, which means that then what we ought to do is really take that same posture of humility that we take when we own it, take that same posture of humility and make amends by doing everything we can to make right what's been made wrong. Now, granted, there are times that our failures cause something to become broken that can never be fixed again, but really I think what this is about is trying to do our best to make things as right as they can be. I think there's a great example of this in the scriptures, little tiny man in the Bible named Zacchaeus. Everyone, you ever heard of Zacchaeus? Zacchaeus was a wee little man, and a wee little man was he. Yes, thank you very much. That's called Sunday school. And yes, I'm in therapy. Zacchaeus! Okay, so Zacchaeus was a tax collector. Not very well liked. He ripped a lot of people off, did a lot of things that he should have done. Stole money from a lot of people. Well, he ends up one day meeting Jesus, and his life is transformed as a result. And I mean, his life has changed. And so what does he do? First thing he does is he decides that he's going to make amends with those that he wronged. And Zacchaeus says, okay, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to pay back every person that I defrauded times 4. His life has changed because of Jesus. And the first thing he did is, I'm going to make amends with those I've done wrong. I'm going to pay them back four times whatever it is that I took from them. See, and here's the thing. For us, you know where amends usually begins for us? It usually begins with the one thing that we always think we're so good at, but really oftentimes aren't. It really starts with what's called an apology. Think about this. Okay, here's the thing. Have you ever noticed that apologizing has almost become a lost art? I mean, seriously, think about this. I mean, and that's understandable, okay? Because first of all, nobody likes to apologize. It's not fun because you're admitting failure, right? No one likes to do that. It's humiliating. And the thing is, you cannot really genuinely apologize to someone and still have room for pride. I mean, if you're really going to apologize, there's no room for pride. So it's tough. And yet it's so, so, so important. Look, you know as well as I do, okay, when a person cannot take ownership and apologize for the pain and the hurt they brought into your life, they might as well be wearing a t-shirt that says, I think you suck and I don't care about you. Seriously, they might as well wear a big old t-shirt that says, I don't give a crap about you, you mean nothing to me, because it hurts. It's how you feel. It's painful. Because see, here's the thing. Without an apology, first of all, there's no recognition that a mistake or failure has even happened. When there's no apology, there's no commitment for change. When there's no apology, there is no, and this is the worst part of it all, there is no emotional contact between you and the person that you care so much about. It's painful, and that hurts. See, here's the thing. Apologizing is one of the most, well, it's one of the most powerful gestures we could ever show another human being. I mean, it resonates with the heart of others. I mean, no one can argue with an authentic apology. Well, actually, some can, and they will, and they won't accept your apology. But you know what? At that point, it's their problem. I mean, the bottom line is, at the end of the day, what really matters is that you've done what's right. It doesn't matter if the person has accepted your apology or not. You've done what's right. And when you stand before God, you are going to be responsible for you, not them. I mean, if you think about it, an apology is almost as powerful as saying I love you to someone. It's almost like taking I love you and flipping it on its head. Because, I mean, think about this for a second, okay? If I love you means that I care about you and I'm happy about it, well, an apology means I hurt you and I'm sorry about it. And see, that's where healing begins. Man, not just healing for the other person, but healing for the perpetrator. That's where healing begins, but it has to be done well. So what does that look like? Well, I'll tell you where it starts. It starts by engaging the other person. I mean, it starts by engaging the person that you're going to apologize to. I mean, I think like for whatever reason we have this we've given ourselves permission to apologize via text messaging or Facebook or whatever, and I think that is just such a lousy way to apologize. Listen, if you have hurt someone, if you have failed another person, do whatever you got to do. If it means you got to get on an airplane and fly somewhere, yeah, but it's expensive. And if you got to get in a car and you got to drive 10 hours, if you got to cancel an appointment, if you've got to miss work and stay home and talk to your wife and apologize to her, or your husband or whatever it is, and you've got to engage and see. And then once you engage, it's really rather simple. And see, we still mess it up, but it's still rather simple. Let me give you five things to write down. I want to give you five practical steps to apologizing. Some of you need to write this down because you owe somebody an apology. Some, if you're sleeping, you owe me an apology, and I will come to you to get it, okay? Let me give you five very practical things to keep in mind when you're apologizing. Here's the first one. Number one, acknowledge your failure. How do you do that? I have failed you. Yeah, I've hurt you. I've done wrong. I've let you down. Acknowledge your failure. Number two, acknowledge the impact of that failure. I've hurt you, I've let you down, I've done you wrong, I've failed you, and because of that, I know that I've caused you a lot of pain. Or I've put you in a very precarious position, right? I have hurt you. See, this is where you gotta be careful, though, because here's what a lot of us slip into when we apologize. We say things like, we're all guilty of this. We say things like, look, I'm sorry that you were offended by what I said. No. Listen. Say, I'm sorry for offending you. Yeah, but Scott, I didn't mean to offend them. No, but you did. You offended them. They felt offended, okay? So just bite your freaking pride and apologize to them. Take responsibility. Acknowledge the impact of the failure. Number three, tell them you're sorry. Let's practice that right now. Turn the person next to you. Say, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for whatever I might do in the future to hurt you. I'm sorry. Don't start listing out everything. We don't have time for that. No, tell them you're sorry, okay? So here, listen. Okay, I failed you. I failed you, and I know that it's caused you great pain. And for that, I am truly sorry. And then if you add anything into that, the only thing you should add into that is number four, commit to change. Okay, so you might add into that, and I'm going to be committed to doing whatever I can to not make that same mistake again. I'm going to try really hard to not let that happen again. And then number five, shut the bleep up. Shut up. Listen to me. See, that's where we screw up. It is, because what do? Well, I'm sorry. It's just that. Right? I'm sorry for what I did, but I didn't mean to do it. No, but you did it. So say you're sorry and shut your lips and eat your chips. Just say you're sorry. Don't make excuses. Don't complicate it. Don't qualify it. Listen, that kind of apology, you know what that shows? That shows ownership. It shows ownership. It shows that you're trying to make amends. Parents, one of the greatest things you could ever do is teach your kids how to apologize. I mean, first of all, when you teach your kids to apologize, you know what it does? It teaches them to take ownership for their failures. Man, there is nothing worse. Okay, think of the person you work with who never takes ownership of their failures, always makes excuses, okay? Listen, that will be your child if you don't teach them how to apologize. No one likes that. No one will like them. And as a result, no one will like you. It teaches them to take ownership of their failures. Here's the other thing, though. It shows them how their failures hurt the other person. But you know what else it does? It shows them that perhaps the person who hurt them yesterday isn't as evil as they think they are. Tell you what else it does is it teaches them they don't have to be right all the time. Parents, listen, let me tell you something. You want to teach your kids how to apologize? Best way to do it is to let go of your pride and to apologize to them when you fail your children. Listen, I got to tell you, I am so fortunate. My father, I remember numerous occasions he apologized to me as a child. And I'll tell you, so for me now, you know, I remember that. And so when I fail my children, I find it easier because I remember back to my dad apologizing to me. And here I am today, such respect for my father. And you know, sometimes we're afraid to do that, aren't we? But I'll tell you, so now for me, when it's time to apologize to my 2-year-old because I tried to throw him out the window while we're driving on the highway, he was driving me nuts. No, I'm kidding. I'm joking. Jeez Louise. But it helps us take ownership. So show your children. Demonstrate it to your children. So, okay, we take ownership. We make amends. These are huge. These are so important when it comes to owning and to following up with our failures. Now, there's a story in the Bible. Many of you have probably heard it. It's the story of the prodigal son. Now, if you don't know the story, it's basically this son goes to his father, asks for his inheritance, and his father gives it to him. He takes it. The son runs away. He parties, and he ruins his life. And one day, he ends up slopping around with a bunch of pigs, and he finally comes to his senses, which hopefully at that point you would, and he decides it's time to go home and make things right. And so here's what happens, okay? So he's thinking about how he's going to approach this, and this is how the story goes. Listen, Luke 15, verse 17. When he finally came to his senses, he said to himself, "At home, even the hired servants have food enough to spare, and here I am dying of hunger. I will go home to my father, and I will say, Father, I have sinned against both heaven and you. But Dad, it's just that, see, if you should have known better than to give me that inheritance because you know that I'm young and immature. It's your fault, Dad. It's your fault, Mom. You shouldn't have given me the car. You know I drive fast. Right? It's the credit cards company. It's their fault. They know I like to spend. They shouldn't have given me one. They shouldn't have pre-approved me. It's their fault. No. Listen, Father, I have sinned against both heaven and you, and I am no longer worthy of being called your son. Please take me on as a hired servant. What a great example. What a great example. First of all, he doesn't wait for his dad to come running to him. Some of you are waiting for the other person to say they're sorry and to apologize to you. You need to stop, and you need to go to them. He doesn't wait. He identifies the problem. He owns it. He comes up with a plan to amend it. I mean, what a great example to us as we take ownership of our failures, as we do everything we can to amend what's broken. A while back, there was a campaign that was launched in France. And the campaign, really the goal of the campaign was to urge young people to have an organ donation card. And so to really get the point across, they really made these ads, pretty intense. And sort of the overall idea and message, the campaign focused on how even the worst individuals in the world can still become good people by donating their organs once they're dead. And the ads are pretty intense. Let me show you a couple of them. Now you may not be able to see in the corner. It says, it's never too late to become a better person. Donate your organs after your death. It's never too late to become a better person. That's a good slogan, isn't it? And I think it's a really good slogan for those of us who have failed. See, your failure does not have to be the end of the story. It's never too late to become a better person. None of us are beyond the reach of grace. In fact, not only are we not beyond the reach of grace, but listen, there are lessons and there are opportunities in the midst of the mess that God wants to use to help us reinvent those failures. Man, see, here's the thing. I don't know about you, okay, but can I tell you something? For me, okay, oftentimes it is through my pain, it is through my mistakes, it is through my failures that I learn some of the greatest lessons in my life. I wish it wasn't that way. It's just how it is. And my guess is probably the same way for you too. See, because there's something about failure and pain that teaches us something like nothing else can. I mean, here's the thing. It's almost as if all the other learning methods are doubtful and short-term in nature. We forget it somehow. But pain, it's a different sort of teacher. It's very hard to forget the lessons that she teaches. And yes, she's cruel, she's unrelenting, but I'll tell you what, at least we can walk away with something that can actually make us stronger. That's what pain does. See, that's why failure is a terrible, terrible thing to waste. Man, our failures, yeah, people do it all the time. I see it all the time as a pastor, people who fail, and what happens is, instead of becoming a better person, they end up becoming bitter and angry at everybody else. They get angry at themselves, and they never recover from their failure. Here's what happens. Okay, these times in our lives, when we mess up, when we fail, when we hurt ourselves, when we hurt others, here's the temptation. The temptation is to set up shop in the rubble of our lives and to just sit in the rubble and do nothing. That's the temptation. See, the thing is, when that happens, all we're doing is wasting our pain. Listen, here's the thing. If our lives, if our relationships, if our leadership roles, if our priorities, whatever it might be, if all of those things look exactly like they did before our fall, then we have wasted one of the greatest opportunities life will ever present to us. We've wasted it. And perhaps that is the greatest failure of all. So how do we respond to our failures? Well, first we own it. We work to amend what's broken, but then we also need to reinvent our world. Not just repeat it, not just fill it with the same opportunity we had before, but we need to reinvent our world. Winston Churchill, who, by the way, if you know his story, was filled with all kinds of mistakes, failures. Someone once asked if he thought history would be kind to him, and his response, I love it, his response was, "Of course history will be kind to me, for I intend to write it." I love that. Man, I love that. I love the tenacity there. I love the optimism for the future. I love the boldness of that statement. He also said this. I thought this was great. Success, listen to this. Success is the ability to go from one failure to another with no loss of enthusiasm. Listen, your failure is not the end of your story. A second chance can begin now. J.K. Rowling, who was the author of the Harry Potter hoopla, gave a commencement speech at Harvard University a couple of years ago. And in recalling her days when she was divorced, single mom, almost homeless, she shared a few thoughts on failure. I want to close with this. Listen. She said these words, "Failure meant a stripping away of the inessential. I stopped pretending to myself that I was anything other than what I was, and I began to direct all my energy into finishing only the work that mattered to me. Had I really succeeded at anything else, I might have never found the determination to succeed in the one area I believed I truly belonged." Listen. She goes on to say, "I was set free because my greatest fear had already been realized. And I was still alive, and I still had a daughter whom I adored, and I had an old typewriter and a big idea. And so, rock bottom became the solid foundation on which I rebuilt my life." Behind your failures, behind your weakness, your pain, your scars, is the strength and the power and the grace of a God who, in the words of the psalmist, is compassionate and gracious, slow to anger, abounding in love. A God who does not treat us as our sins deserve, or repay us according to our iniquities or failures. See, it turns out that this place called rock bottom that you and I feel like that we hit so hard in those moments of failure actually makes a great foundation. Would you bow your heads with me? Let's pray. God, I think it's safe to say that our response to failure in our lives requires a great deal of courage and trust in you. God, whether it's the moment of owning our part in that failure, whether it's as we seek to make right what's been broken, or whether it's as we trust you to give us the strength and the grace to reinvent our lives, it takes a great deal of courage. And so I pray that you would fill us with that courage today. Would you just take a moment, just right where you're sitting, just keep your heads bowed, your eyes closed for just a second. You know, perhaps for some of us, we need to leave here today making some decisions. And maybe there's some of us today that we need to leave here today making a decision that we're going to trust God for that courage, because there's some ownership that needs to happen. Maybe you spent a lot of time pointing the finger at others, blaming others around you. Perhaps today, one of the best things you could do is just walk out of here trusting that God's going to give you the courage to own those mistakes and failures of your life. And for others, maybe it's a matter of trusting him for the courage that you need to make amends. In fact, maybe even as you sat here today, God brought to mind an individual in your life that you need to approach with a heart and an attitude of humility. And just simply start with a very sincere apology, without excuses, without qualification, regardless of whether or not they're willing to accept your apology or not. See, listen, the important thing is that you're willing to do the right thing in your life. Because at the end of the day, that is all you're responsible for. And there's healing in that. And maybe there's some of us, man, who are just really struggling to find hope in our lives right now because of failure. Maybe it's a moral failure, marriage failure, relationship of some sort, career. Maybe it's a parenting failure, financial failure. And so I pray for you right now. God, would you remind us today how truly loved by you we really are? And God, would you paint a fresh picture in our hearts of the beauty of your grace, your mercy, and your forgiveness? God, would you remind us today that we as your children, we stand before you today accepted and loved and forgiven because you are a God of second chances. And so today we let go of the shame and we let go of the regret and we let go of the pain and we embrace those chances that you constantly pour out to us. Because God, you are constantly, constantly in pursuit of broken people. You never give up. Your arm of grace is constantly stretched out. And so today, God, we just as we are, we come to you with our brokenness. And we just want to reach out to you. We want to receive your hand of grace and mercy. We want to receive your love in our lives today, God. And we do that right now. And not only do we receive that, Lord, but we, God, we declare and we announce that today in our hearts and in our lives that you truly are the God of second chances. And we pray that together as your people. And everyone said, amen.